This is the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. This show examines the latest legal topics and news facing families whose loved ones have been injured in a nursing home. It is hosted by lawyers Rob Schenck and Will Smith of Schenck Smith LLC, a personal injury law firm based in Atlanta, Georgia. Welcome to the show.
Hello out there and welcome once again to the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. My name is Rob Schenck.
And I'm Will Smith.
And we are trial lawyers and we are your humble hosts of this episode of the podcast. Maybe you've heard of a movie called Frozen. If you have children,
you definitely have.
Yeah. Or maybe you go to the movies because it looked good, a good animated film. Or maybe you know about Stockholm Syndrome.
Oh my God, where is this going?
I don't know.
Are we talking about the origin of the word ombudsman?
That's where I was. That's where I was just going now occurred to me.
Or smorgasbord. Did you say anything about smorgasbord?
I was going to say Swedish fish, but I feel like putting Swedish in it would have ruined it.
Okay. So this episode, one of the things that we're going to talk about are ombudsman, which is, it comes from a Swedish term, which means legal representative. Anyway, so who are ombudsmen and what do they do?
So ombudsmen operate in all 50 states and in Washington, D.C., Puerto Rico, and Guam. Principally, they respond to complaints made by family members of loved ones in nursing homes and long-term care facilities, assisted living facilities. In 2015, according to the Administration on Aging, they fielded 200,000 complaints. Of those, almost 117,000 were reported by the Administration of Aging to have been resolved in a way that satisfied the person that made the complaint, and 30,000 were partially resolved. At the top of the list of the issues resolved by ombudsmen in 2015 were problems concerning care, residents' rights, physical environment, admissions and discharges, and abuse and neglect. Generally, ombudsmen are volunteers. By and large, they're volunteers. And by state law and federal law, generally the ombudsman has permission to enter the nursing home, assisted living facility, or wherever, anytime, unannounced, and talk to residents wherever they want. There is a certain amount of training that an ombudsman has to go through, which I think a lot of it is conflict resolution. A lot of it is going to be education on not long-term care facility administration and basic rights under the law.
Residents' Bill of Rights.
Right. And in addition to investigating and trying to resolve complaints, ombudsmen also, depending on what state you're in, help families choose nursing homes, although they don't make recommendations. So if you're wondering, should I place my loved one in nursing home X or nursing home Y, you can likely call your local ombudsman to say, hey, which one, you know, presents challenges, which ones, what are the pros and cons?
Or, you know, can I get one within a reasonable driving distance of the family? Is there one that can accept, you know, her insurance? Is there one that will accept her as a resident? Because a nursing home doesn't have to accept you as a resident. So here's why ombudsmen are important. We get calls every single week about nursing home complaints. We address a very narrow scope of those complaints. And this is what people need to understand, is that we are personal injury attorneys at the very core. We sue long-term care facilities, even short-term care facilities, for professional malpractice. That malpractice has caused a very significant injury to our potential client. So the nursing home resident or the patient at a hospital has passed away. They have suffered a traumatic injury or a bed sore or an infection. So the complaints that we're dealing with are of an extreme nature. But Georgia, being one of the worst offenders of nursing home care in the country, there are unlimited complaints out there about nursing homes. Everything from, you know, I don't think that they're giving my mom the food that she wants, to, you know, she's got bed sores, you know, maybe a stage one, or they're not brushing her hair in the way that I like, or I can't find, you know, certain items that I brought up there for her, and I think somebody might be stealing them. All the way to the things that we do, where, you know, my mother has passed away because of what they did. So people will often call us on these, and I, you know, when I say that they're minor complaints, I don't mean that from a judgment point of view. I mean compared to the death of a nursing home.
To catastrophic injury.
To catastrophic injury, they are minor. And I will tell them, you know, that is not what we do. But that doesn't mean that you don't have a remedy. So there are several different remedies that you can have in the state of Georgia. You can hire, if it's catastrophic enough, you can hire attorneys like us. Or if it's something that's not quite as catastrophic, you can complain to the Department of Community Health. Now, the Department of Community Health in Georgia, again, being one of the worst offenders in the country, is extremely backlogged. And anybody who may be listening or watching this podcast who has filed a complaint with DCH probably understands that now, because it will take them forever and a day to actually go to the nursing home and address it. However, ombudsman, theoretically, not really quite sure how practical this is, hopefully it is pretty practical, are able to respond a lot quicker, and they can address concerns that range from, you know, my mom doesn't like Diet Coke and they keep giving her Diet Coke, all the way up to, I think that they're, you know, stealing money from my mom's room. So ombudsman can be an amazing resource for families out there who have complaints about nursing homes that don't rise to the level of, you know, catastrophic injury.
And so, as just by way of example, so we were evaluating a case in which the resident, slightly ornery, did not like to have hair brushed, nails clipped, that kind of thing. And so those hygiene matters fell by the wayside, and when the family was finally contacted, the nails had fungus overgrown, the hair was gross, that kind of thing. And so what the ombudsman did when they were notified by the family was came in and facilitated an actual sit-down conversation between the family and the nursing home to say, hey, these are the issues. The personal hygiene is becoming a problem. You know, we're not casting blame on the resident. We're not casting blame on the nursing home, but what can we do? And they, over the course of 30 or 40 minutes, they worked those issues out. And the reason why it could be worked out is because the ombudsman was there to facilitate and to get to the bottom of those issues. Because, again, generally an ombudsman can walk right in there like they own the place. That's generally the power that they have and they wield. So they can also arrange for conversations. Now, I'm not saying that you might get the audience member might be able to get a meeting with the director of nursing or the administrator of the facility that your loved one is in, but definitely calling the ombudsman to get the ombudsman involved might be one step towards that.
And understand something, that ombudsmen are agents of the state of Georgia. So to find an ombudsman, to make a complaint, to get help from an ombudsman, you go to, I believe it's aging.georgia.gov. So it is a government website. So that means that these ombudsmen, they're not just, you know, civilians, so non-governmental employees who you can hire that can come in and try to, you know, mediate with the nursing home. They're people who go in there who work for the state of Georgia, which is the source of the nursing home's money. So if an ombudsman finds a situation is unresolvable with the nursing home, and it rises to a certain severity level, they can get DCH involved as well, and the nursing home could be looking at some fines, some administrative issues, and just getting on DCH's radar in the first place. Which, you know, at the end of the day, I'm not really sure. You know, I'm a little pessimistic about anything that comes with enforcement against nursing homes, but at least it is still a remedy.
Yeah, and at least there's a paper trail.
And
you know, that might be something that can be used against them later on by an actual personal injury attorney.
Yeah, and simply, and a lot of times, I'll be honest with you, simply getting somebody involved is enough to resolve the issue. Okay, because the staff at the nursing homes, and I have said this time and time again, they are not evil. They're not the bad guys. In my perspective, the vast majority of time, the bad guy is the owners are the owners and operators of these nursing homes, and the administrators who are pocketing a lot of money and short-staffing the nursing home, and putting these RNs and LPNs and CNAs in a horrible position. So if typically, if you've got an issue and an ombudsman gets involved, or you even bring it up to the director of nursing or, you know, the different staff nurses, I think that the vast majority of the time that they're going to address it and they're going to help you resolve it. Especially on these minor issues like, hey, my mom doesn't like Diet Coke, stop giving her Diet Coke. Right, they may just not know about it.
Yeah, like I said at the top of the show, I mean, at least in 2015, of the 200,000 complaints filed, I believe across the country, 117,000 of them were resolved. I mean, that's a pretty good percentage. So that there's a high likelihood that if you get the ombudsman involved, whatever the issue is can likely be taken care of. At least there's a good probability of it.
Yeah, absolutely, and And then again, in the same way that we don't get involved in these minor versus catastrophic injuries that we deal with, you're also not going to contact an ombudsman to resolve an issue where your loved one has passed away because of an infection caused by a stage 4 bed sore. So ombudsmen are best used for non-catastrophic issues. Doesn't mean that we might not get an ombudsman involved, but if it rises to the level of death, get an attorney. If it's something that isn't catastrophic and isn't threatening the life of your loved one, call the ombudsman or go to the ombudsman website, aging.georgia.gov. So, because we're talking about remedies, let me just throw out there what I think is a very good idea for dealing with non-catastrophic situations. So again, situations that don't threaten the life and health of your loved one. And I'm talking about, you know, somebody is stealing something from my mom, they're not giving her the food she likes, I wanted her to have a perm and they won't do that, or I got her a perm and they gave her a shower the next day. That type of thing. Did you know you're not supposed to take a shower immediately after perm?
Here's something interesting about Will. The only reason why he knows that is because of the movie Legally Blonde.
Actually, that's not true. The reason that I know that is because as a CNA, I gave a resident a shower the day after her perm.
Why would you do that?
I'm a man, and at the time I didn't know that you couldn't do that. And the resident kept telling me, you know, hey, don't give me a shower. But understand something, that this was a resident who had dementia, so she kept saying, I don't want to shower because when I run across the field tonight to go to that boy's house, it's cold and I'm going to get sick. That's what she was telling me.
Okay.
So clearly, I can't neglect somebody's hygiene just because they're living in a fantasy where it's 1950s and it's a Nicholas Spark situation. That's the guy who wrote The Notebook, by the way, and I know you know that.
I didn't know that. That's amazing.
So,
like, why would you know that information about The Notebook?
I mean, it's pop information. It's popular information.
Ah, man, I'd really that's a really deep reference to know the person that wrote.
No. It is extremely superficial. In the same way that I know who wrote Harry Potter.
I feel like that's a lot more well known.
No. You don't watch enough popular culture media. That's the problem. Anyway, on administrative issues or non-catastrophic issues, here's what I suggest you do. The very first thing is bring it up to the staff. Okay? Don't jump ahead to an ombudsman. And if it sounds like I'm telling you that you have to try to keep a good relationship for the with the staff so that your loved one can get the best care, I am. Is that fair? It's irrelevant. It's reality. So what I mean by that is don't jump what I consider to be the chain of command. So the very first thing that you do is go to the staff and say, hey, guys, having an issue here. Mom hates turnip greens, and you keep giving her turnip greens. Can you give her mashed potatoes instead? Do that. If that doesn't work, call your ombudsman. And then if somewhere down the road it gets even worse and your mother ends up passing away because of some negligence, then you get an attorney like us. But my main point of that is first try to talk to the staff, then contact your ombudsman. Also, ombudsmen are a resource which is extremely limited. So don't call your ombudsman every time they give your mom Pepsi instead of Coke. You know what I mean? Like, try to address a lot of these issues yourself. But if you can't, they're a great resource.
Yeah, following the chain of command is a good bit of advice. But definitely, that, as a general rule, you want to try to be, and sometimes it's not possible because you live in a different state or different city, but you want to try to be present at the nursing home where your loved one is, knowing the names of the CNAs, knowing the names.
Oh, absolutely. That goes without saying. That is the number one way to prevent negligence and just general discomfort with your loved one in a nursing home is being present. A nursing home is not a place that you can send your loved one and then just, you know, wash your hands and go, well, you know, Grandma Bertha is going to be taken care of. I guess that's it. I'll call her every holiday. No, because there are limited resources at the nursing home. And again, is this fair? It is not fair, but it is reality. There are limited resources. Limited because the fat cats who own the place are hogging most of them for themselves. But they're understaffed. And it's an extremely hard job. So people who don't have loved ones are usually the quickest to get neglected because there's not somebody there. I mean, it's squeaky wheel gets the grease.
That's right.
So make sure that you're constantly involved in your loved one's care. Make sure that if you have issues, you address it to the staff. And failing those two things, contact your ombudsman.
I would love to segue into something in the news as of late. And it affects Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services and potentially the service that your loved one is going to get at a nursing home.
Yeah.
And this has to do with the 2-in-1-out rule that President Trump promulgated via executive order in January of this year. So if you don't know about it, it goes like this. On January 30th, so not even, I don't even think a week after he was inaugurated, yeah. Trump signed executive order 13771 entitled Reducing Regulation and Controlling Regulatory Costs, the 2-in-1-out rule. That order says that unless prohibited by law, whenever an executive department or agency, like the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, publicly proposes for notice and comment or otherwise promulgates a new regulation, it shall identify at least 2 existing regulations to be repealed. The heads of all agencies are directed, according to this order, that the total incremental cost of all new regulations, including repealed regulations, to be finalized this year shall be no greater than zero. So in other words, if the head of the Department of Community Health, the head of Medicare, Medicaid Services, wants to issue a new rule that's needed, regardless of what it is, everybody needs to wear latex gloves, whatever the rule is, that head of the agency has to repeal two other regulations, regardless of if it's about the rule that the new rule.
Oh, yeah.
So I
get that a lot of people hear that and think, well, I don't see why that's a bad idea, because it is the case that there are a tremendous amount. I mean, there's almost 200,000 pages in the Code of Federal Regulations, and many of those are antiquated. Many laws that are on the books are no longer enforced. Georgia, every state has the same thing.
I mean, yeah, it'll be like, you can't bring your horse to town on Sunday.
And it's extremely complicated. It's an extremely complicated bureaucracy. And so I'm certainly not taking up for that bureaucracy and not suggesting that there isn't something that needs to be done. But what this administration is suggesting is a bad idea, namely because it would be like this. Let's say that you went to a financial advisor and you're like, hey, listen, I need to start saving money, and I haven't been saving money very well. It would be like them suggesting, all right, well, here we go. Every time you spend money on eating out, you have to sell two objects from your house. That's just not a smart thing to do. I mean, it's completely arbitrary, and it's going to have a weird result.
The people that agree with Will primarily are the Natural Resources Defense Council, the Communication Workers of America, and Public Citizen, who filed a lawsuit requesting an injunction to block this order.
Mm-hmm.
So Chris Shelton, the president of the Communications Workers of America, which is a union, said workers shouldn't be required to trade off one set of job, health, and safety protections in order to get protection from another equally dangerous condition. This order means that the asbestos workplace standard, for example, could be discarded in order to adopt safeguards for nurses from infectious diseases in their workplaces. Trump has vowed to repeal 75% of all federal regulation, a tall task considering that there are more than 178,000 pages,
178,000
pages of rules in the Code of Federal Regulation. So the president's 1 and 2 out order is part of his larger plan to roll back not only controversial regulations from Obama's administration, but also outdated regulations. And here's what I wanted to say, because this is interesting to me, that, and also this is going to date this article and date this podcast, because it references what Sean Spicer says in defense of this regulation, which is, right, we all know Sean Spicer's in a dungeon somewhere. And now it's, what's her name? She's the daughter of Mike Huckabee Sanders.
Sarah
Huckabee Sanders is now basically taking over the Spicy role. Sean Spicer at a presser said the bottom line is that overregulation has stemmed economic growth and job creation. Reviewing those to make sure that they are meeting their intent and not siphoning job creation at the expense of whatever they were intended to do is something that should be welcomed by everybody. Which is one of those non-answered, not like it's crazy.
Not just that, but it's also one of those things where, like, look, let's say that I accept your premise, which I'm really inclined to do, to be honest with you, that overregulation and increased bureaucracy have slowed business growth. Okay, awesome. But if your solution is launching watermelons at a random wall, your solution has to actually fix the problem. And one of the issues that I have with this solution is not only is it ridiculous, because it's a bad idea to force people to get rid of regulations that may be effective in the hopes of reducing overall regulation. It also sounds like it might be a completely toothless law, executive order, because it says in the beginning, unless otherwise prohibited by law, which means that they don't have to do it if there's a law that says, nope, you have to have that regulation. So that could be a way that you read it, which means that this just might be lip service, right? So it's almost like if it says, unless it's not a good idea, this is what I want you to do. So you never really have to do it, because you could always say, well, it's not a good idea. Or right. in the example that they're given here, well, what, you know, do we have to get rid of asbestos protections in favor of something else? Well, if it's prohibited by law, maybe not. I mean, I'm certainly glad that people are attacking this with an injunction, but I want people to understand that this is probably just lip service, because that very first sentence is a weasel phrase that makes the rest of this just completely inoperable.
And we'll find out. I mean, like, I think that, you know, we'll keep going back to this and find out what the status is of this actual lawsuit is, and whether or not they're successful, which I don't think they're going to be. What's interesting, at least to me, about this particular action is that these plaintiffs, the Public Citizen, Natural Resource Defense Council, communication workers, the people that have brought this lawsuit, have sued individually the president and the heads of various agencies, which is required by the 11th Amendment, which we won't get into very much. But a particular court case that narrows the scope of the 11th Amendment, which is you can't sue a state for money damages in federal court, yada, yada, yada. That's going to get way too in-depth on stuff. But the reason why I even bring that up is because what's the case that I'm referring to, Will?
Is it Hans v. Louisiana?
Yes. So Hans v. Louisiana says that you can't sue a state in federal court for money damages, but you can sue for injunctive remedies, meaning that you can request that the court tell somebody to do something or not do something. Mm-hmm. And the real reason why I bring that up is because it's one of the most cited cases in all of, I guess, American common law. And that case makes me mad, because when I was in law school, the internet connections weren't as powerful as they are today. And so whenever you would go to read that case, it would take 10 minutes to load because of all the citations to it. I'm talking about, like, it's been cited 50,000 times.
Right.
So, you know what I mean? So, like, you know, if you if you forgot that that's the case and you clicked on it, your computer would shut down, mm-hmm. because it couldn't load the case fast enough because of all the cites that came with it, the citations to it that came with it. That is actually the most exciting story I think that I've ever told on this podcast.
If you ever take a class at Toastmasters, that needs to be your graduation speech, for sure.
Can you graduate from Toastmasters?
Well, you get a certificate or something like that.
Well, I will say this, that Toastmasters generally will award certificates for fabulous outros and fabulous endings to various speeches.
That's not true, but I like the segue. And speaking of segues, let's now segue.
Get on our segue and put our helmets on and drive to the end of this podcast. With that befuddled and ridiculous monologue by me, your humble host, we draw now to the end of this podcast. This has been the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast, which is available for a download in two different forms. You can either download the audio on Stitcher or iTunes, or where you get your podcast from, or you can watch this podcast on our YouTube channel or at our website, which is nursinghomeabusepodcast.com, nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. And with that, we will see you next time.
See you next time.
Thanks for tuning in to the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. Please be sure to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher, and feel free to leave us some feedback. And for more information about the topics discussed in this episode, check out the show website, nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. That's nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. See you next time.